And last, we have Jeff Phillips from Wisconsin Department of Health Services. Welcome, Jeff.
All right. Thank you, and welcome, everybody. Thanks for getting out here early on a Wednesday morning, your last day of the conference. We appreciate you being here. And thanks, of course, to CDC and our other federal partners for kind of pulling us all together on this. I think it's a good opportunity to see the variability between the BRACE programs, but also to see some similarities that the things that we're trying to deal with and work on. As Mark alluded to, I'm Jeff Phillips. I'm the former Climate and Health Program Manager for Wisconsin and now the Director of the Bureau of Environmental and Occupational Health for the state of Wisconsin. So I've been kind of in this, in the BRACE role for about 18 months. We started in 2012 with our grant. And what I want to kind of walk you through here is really just kind of a look at where Wisconsin kind of started the process, where we've gone to looking at the environmental changes and then ultimately to the health impacts that we're going to see. But really I want to emphasize that we see our role in the Wisconsin BRACE program as really being about working collaboratively, developing capacity, developing resiliency, developing those adaptation strategies while engaging with local public health in particular, some of our emergency management personnel, as well as the local community. And we'll talk a little bit towards the end of my presentation of how we're trying to garner support and push this adaptation strategies into the most local parts of public health. No relationships to disclose. Wisconsin's been lucky enough that starting the BRACE program, or just before the BRACE program started, there was a group of climate scientists, climate and health researchers, specialists, governmental agencies, environmental people that kind of coalesced in about 2009, calling themselves the Wisconsin Initiative on Climate Change Impacts, or WICI. What WICI did is during the period 2009 to 2011, they really put together the science behind climate change. And they put out a report in 2011, Wisconsin's Changing Climate Impacts and Adaptation. And really what this did was gave us a very robust discussion on the climate trends based on NOAA's 176 weather stations in that part of the states, as well as pulling together data from 1950 through 2006 and doing the science behind it. So what they did is they took the CMIP-3 multimodal climate circulation models, downscaled it to the upper Midwest, and then further downscaled it to the state of Wisconsin, and then chose the period 1980 through 2055 to do some projections based on the analysis of the trends that they had collected over that time. The WICI program put together this their data and their modeling using the A1B middle range scenario for carbon emissions, and based that idea on the at the time the IPCC Fourth Assessment Report, which came out in 2007. Where that got us in Wisconsin is we were able to take the information from WICI and use that as the cornerstone of the BRACE program without having to deal with building our own modeling. It had really been done, and of course, the groups that WICI represents and the people that are the core partners of WICI are the people that we're playing with and working with on a daily basis. So we all wanted to be able to use the same materials, the same models, the same outcomes, because we were the people that were all networking together. So it was a good opportunity for us to kind of hit the ground running in 2012 when we got our grant funding. Up here I've got just a listing of the partners that are in WICI currently. It's kind of an interesting organization because it's designed to not really have a really strong, overbearing oversight piece. The WICI partners are all there on a voluntary basis and certainly represent multiple aspects of climate science and environmental science. The way WICI kind of shook out is that there is an oversight board that includes these partners that kind of give a little bit of guidance, a little bit of overtime planning, and have developed a number of working groups that are based on a lot of the climatic outcomes. And so the working groups have a council that they meet as, and then there's this loose network of these working groups that are kind of doing research and projects and development and collaboration and all of this kind of stuff with climate. But it's kind of loosely organized, so you can share information between the working groups or you can ask for assistance from working groups, but you're not really tied into anything. It's really kind of a unique situation. Some of the working groups that and the topic areas that they represent may give you an idea of how this all kind of mixes together. We've got working groups on community adaptation, on human health and human health planning, agriculture, forestry, fisheries, municipal planning and engineering, community planning, community design, green space, as well as some regional issues. We have a working group that represents the Milwaukee urban area and all the infrastructure issues within the urban constraints, as well as a working group that deals with the upper Green Bay area, looking at inflow into Lake Michigan and harmful algal blooms and some of the climatic impacts that we're seeing in Lake Michigan. So again, all of these groups are out there allowing us to feed off each other, share with each other, and do a lot of really cool projects together. So if we look at some of the data from Wisconsin really briefly and give you an idea of what we're concerned with, first off, as with everybody else, we're dealing with temperature extremes and things that have happened. If you think about, you know, on a global basis, we've looked at in the last 100 or so years, globally, we've impacted our temperature by about a degree to a degree and a half worldwide. In Wisconsin, we're looking at a degree and a half increase just since 1950, so we seem to be warming slightly a little bit ahead of things. But you can see there's a lot of variability as well. The areas with the yellow and the green are areas that have really warmed faster, a couple of degrees faster than the rest of the state. And I'd like you to kind of think about, as we go through the process here and we get to some of the projects that we're working on, think about this part of western Wisconsin where it seems to be warming at a much faster rate, and mainly it's warming at a faster rate during the winter months, which have some implications for our vector and disease issues. We're anticipating this is going to go forward. Again, I said that the Wiki report went out to 2055 for most of our projections. On the right side here, we've got an annual average temperature projection of about 6.5 to 7 degrees warmer than what we were for baseline in 1950. So we're anticipating a lot of annual heat increases. The other map here, the first one, is really number of extreme heat days. And this is getting at that idea that not only is it going to be warmer as an average, but it's going to be warmer for extended periods of time during heat wave events. What we're looking at here is a projection that currently in southern Wisconsin, we get about 12 days over 90 degrees per year. What this is telling us in the bottom part of the lower part of the state here is probably 28 to maybe 30 extreme heat event days per year. So a pretty significant impact for us. And even in northern Wisconsin right now, we get about 4 to 5 extreme heat days per year of over 90 degrees. We're anticipating that's going to go up to maybe about a dozen or so. So for those of us that are not used to heat, 90 degrees is extreme, and certainly it becomes something that we need to be really concerned about. We also know that Wisconsin is definitely getting wetter. We have seen an increase, except for that little band across northern Wisconsin where it shows up in red here. The rest of the state has seen significant precipitation increases for the past 50 years. And especially areas where it's the dark blue, kind of the purplish color, those parts of the state have seen an annual average increase of over 7 inches of precipitation per year. So we're pretty concerned that there are parts of the state where we have a lot of agriculture and a lot of potential for flooding that are getting a lot more rainfall than we predict, than what we anticipated and what we saw in the past. The other issue here is and I like to use the graph at the bottom as kind of a capacity building piece that when you think about this, it's pretty easy to say, well, yeah, we got 7 inches more of precipitation per year. But when you look at the red line, the climate trend line here, it does give you that indication that it's a pretty smooth change and you know, it's a little bit per year, per year, per year. It's really not like that. When you look at the blue line and all the bounce in there, you can see that the extremes occur pretty regularly. And we can go from a year of the wettest on record to the year of driest on record within less than 12 months. So a lot of variability, and I think that extremeness is really what's going to drive a lot of the issues with climate going forward. And of course, going forward, we're anticipating continuing to increase in precipitation. Wisconsin's projected to get 25% more precipitation by 2055. And what we're really concerned with, though, is not the annual about it, but this extremity. We're anticipating the number of 2-inch rainfall events per year to increase pretty dramatically. 2 inches is what we're using as our standard, but when you think about it, when you dump a 2-inch rainfall on somewhere in 24 hours or less, it pretty much overwhelms your sewer system, your discharge systems, a lot of issues with runoff, and the pollutants that come with that. So the idea of trending with a lot more intensity and a lot more volume in very short periods of times is something that we're concerned with. Along with that, then, is the timing of those extreme rainfall events. Our projections indicate that Wisconsin will be getting those extreme rainfall events occurring earlier and earlier in the year, actually into our what's currently our winter months. And again, if you think about the warming of the trends and extreme rainfall events coming in February, March, April, we're anticipating that if it's not rain, it's going to be ice or sleet and all of that kind of winter mix. And if it is rain that comes at that time of the year, we're going to be dealing with extreme flooding because it's going to be frozen, it's all going to run off. So a lot of issues with water quality and flood issues early in the year. The other end of the spectrum then, and the other thing that we're worried about is the extreme heat coming later in the year and the rainfall coming early in the year, we're going to have potentially droughts. So it's going to be an all or nothing situation for most of Wisconsin. So that kind of drives what we're looking for from environmental impacts. The way we pulled our ideas for environmental impacts together is by looking at the projections, by looking at the data that Wiki provided us. We, as I said, we kind of started there, and we just started overlaying onto that what type of environmental issues that we could think of, both internally, by looking through literature, by utilizing our interns and some of our EPI staff, going through and trying to identify what kind of environmental impacts we could see. We talked a lot with our science advisory group. And when we pulled the BRACE program together, we developed an advisory group that really brought in the best and the brightest minds that we could find in Wisconsin dealing with climate and the university and the academia that was there and be able to draw into a lot of climate science and a lot of epidemiological expertise. But we also broadened that group to include local public health. We brought in the Great Lakes Intertribal Council, so we've got Native American representation. We've got cities. We've got county health departments. We also brought in the engineering and staff from UW Extension. So we have the agricultural sector in there. We have business sectors in there. All of these different partners that we could think of were pulled together as our advisory group and helped us to identify some of the environmental impacts. And certainly key informants. We pulled a lot of those partners together and really talked about and got some ideas from them what we're going for. To pull that all together, I know you can't read any of this. It's almost impossible for me to read even when I'm blowing it up on my computer. But what we did is we put together a matrix that got at some of the climate exposures that we anticipated. And as we talked through and as we worked with our partners, there were 7 significant exposures that came to the forefront. Extreme heat, right, precipitation, changes to our winter weather patterns, which really was a huge concern for us in Wisconsin, vector-borne diseases, drought, surface water, and groundwater quality issues. And we rely in Wisconsin a lot on groundwater for our drinking water supplies. So that became a huge concern for us. What we did is as we went through and developed those exposure areas, we then tried to tie in the projections from our Wiki report. We tried to tie in the environmental impacts that we had been discussing with our partners. But we also then looked at economic impacts. And the idea was that certainly there are going to be economic impacts that drive health impacts when we get to that point. We also tried to pull in other data sources other than the data literature that we had searched. And ultimately then, this became a way for us to start looking at our health outcomes. And when we put it all together in just a quick kind of a down and dirty visualization of it, we're worried about drought, we're worried about wildfires kind of associated with drought and heat. We're worried about the heat waves and the heat fatalities and the events that come with that. The intense precipitations that we discussed about leading to severe flooding, changes in winter weather, there are parts of our projections that indicate Wisconsin will have 29% less snowfall than what we've had over the long term. Significant economic impact for northern Wisconsin. We're also looking again at some of the water quality impacts and the negative outcomes that come from that, and looking very significantly and very closely at our vector population. Part of what we really needed to do was to get back to where Paul had mentioned earlier, that one of our deliverables was the climate and health profile report. We knew that to be able to get to a climate and health profile report that was going to be useful for us and give us a good starting point as to where we were going to go in the future, we needed to do some better vulnerability assessments. We've had a lot of discussion this morning about vulnerability assessments, and what we had found is that being one of the first states to really try to pull together the climate and health profile report, we found that there was some limited research available that could get us to some of the potential, the indicators and the databases that were out there. But we kept finding that there wasn't really enough. We wanted better indicators. We wanted better ways of trying to measure our outcomes. And we were just struggling with trying to find it. So we kind of flipped that back around and we said, well, if we can't really find really good indicators and we can't find, at this point, really good quantitative analyses, maybe we just need to look at how we can do this qualitatively. So we really focused on a couple of different projects and a couple of different ways that we thought we could pull together data from the most highly respected and best minds and utilize that to lead our climate and health profile report. So first off, what we did is we brought together our key informants, and I explained just shortly before who they were. We really spent a lot of time talking about the existing climate science, talking about potential impacts, talking about the health outcomes that they saw and that they would anticipate, looked at collaboration and research opportunities and talked about where we may need to go with some of that. And then I specifically asked them to think about what would be their top three or four priorities. If they could work on any part of climate and any part of where that climate science would lead us to a negative health outcome, where they would put their energies. So that was our first step. That was our kind of our key informant interview piece. The second thing that we did to work on our vulnerability assessment was to pull together a couple of focus groups utilizing the what at that time was the very, very newly developed ASTO Extreme Weather and Climate Readiness Toolkit for state health departments. So we had been involved prior to the BRACE grant with developing, in conjunction with ASTO and kind of helping them with writing and editing and some of the reading through of their toolkit project. We had been working on that, and my supervisor at the time was very strongly involved with that. So we offered to pilot three parts of the toolkit as a way of us not only helping ASTO get better organized and come up with a better product, but it actually gave us the opportunity to do some assessment internally within our program. So we specifically brought together focus groups of experts to look at air quality, water quality, and then the natural disaster and emergency preparedness piece of the climate readiness toolkit. And by doing that, as I said, it gave us some really good data and some really good ideas as to where we wanted to go with our vulnerability assessment. The last piece of it then was just ongoing discussions with our experts and really relying on mainly the University of Wisconsin and the Department of Natural Resources as being the key players for WICI, really continuing to engage them on a regular basis and looking at how we can help kind of get an idea of what's going on in Wisconsin. When we threw this all together, we put all of our climate-related concerns together. We started to prioritize it, basically doing kind of a nominal approach to kind of, you know, what became the highest importance, what was less high, what kind of fell out of the mix. Really, the things that came to the top in Wisconsin were the extreme heat, precipitation, the flooding, the vector-borne diseases, and adaptation strategies. And by looking at it this way, it really gave us an opportunity to kind of capture that all and pull that all together as part of our climate and health profile report. So we delivered our profile report, our CHIPR, to CDC in early February 2014. again, being one of the few that had gotten to that point. But we saw this as a jumping-off document. We saw this as a way to focus us going forward in the next couple of years of our grant program, and really led to some really good, I think, projects that we'll continue to talk about here in the next few minutes. I also want to let you know that we also took our rather large chipper, squeezed it down a little bit, put a lot of work into this version, which is the executive version. So we took a 50, 60, 70-page document, squeezed it down into 6 pages with some graphics. And we used this kind of as a highlight, kind of as a talking piece, kind of as a get people excited about climate and health. But it does give some really good information. This is included as part of the downloadable materials for this course if you want to look at it later. So the first project that this led us into was a heat vulnerability index project that started with us working at the state level, pulling together a lot of the what you'd expect to be in a vulnerability index. We took the work that had been done by San Francisco Department of Public Health, kind of looked at their method, kind of thought about it a little bit, thought how many of these different data pieces can we get, pull them together. So internally, we were able to come up with 22 different indicators that go down mainly to census tract level. We took those indicators, which included population density, demographics, socioeconomics, environmental data that we could put our hands on, weather data that we could put our hands on, and disease data that we could put our hands on. Squished this all together, threw it together in an analysis, mapped it using our internal GIS process, and none of those indicators was weighted. So it's all there just as the raw data. But it gave us a really good visualization across the state of Wisconsin with the areas, and I know it's going to be hard to see, but the areas that are the dark brown, kind of a reddish-brown color, and then the pink are the two highest vulnerabilities. We broke this into 20% quantiles and utilized it and mapped it that way. So you can see that areas where we've got some economic issues or areas where we've got population or areas where we've got ethnic differences, you can see that those areas became a little higher ranked for vulnerability, whereas like northern Wisconsin with the yellows and the light colors, a lot less vulnerability related to heat. After we did it on a statewide basis, we did the Milwaukee County version, and that was because the Milwaukee Health Department specifically asked us to look at vulnerability. We've had a lot of issues in Milwaukee with heat fatality, and of course we know that in Wisconsin that's like our one big population area. We had some really good data. So we did the same type of analysis in Milwaukee. We dropped out a couple of our indicators. Using only 16 indicators, we dropped out anything that we couldn't get down really good to that granular census tract data. But if you look at it, the one to the right here is Milwaukee. The areas that are the dark purple are the areas of highest vulnerability. And as the commissioner for the Milwaukee Health Department told us, it's like, this is exactly what they knew. They knew that the inner core of the city was most at risk. They knew that the ethnicity changes and the socioeconomic changes in the inner core of the city were specifically issues. But when you put it out there and you visualize it this way, it became a very powerful tool. And in fact, Milwaukee took our map here, even before it was completely in a final version, and put that into their Milwaukee interagency planning documents for their extreme heat task force. So this is not only living on as a standalone, but it's living on in Milwaukee's planning for all heat events going forward. So it's a pretty cool piece of information. The second project that we got started on, and we're just finishing up right now, is a flood vulnerability modeling study. What we wanted to do here is we kept getting information from our emergency management people on mitigation strategies for flooding or damage estimates, but we weren't getting any good, really, really good information as to how do we get to that? How do we know that a 100-year floodplain is accurate? How do we know what populations are at risk when we have a 2 or a 3 or a 4 or a 5-inch rainfall event in a specific watershed? We had no idea. So we worked with the Center for Climate Research at University of Wisconsin and pulled out what here is the Upper Fox River watershed in central Wisconsin. It's a large watershed geographically. A lot of variability, but it feeds into the Fox River Valley, which is our third most populated area in the state, The area of Appleton to Green Bay, we look at as all one big urban area, basically. But this watershed, we're able to gather enough data on flow rates that we were able to take the climate projections that we had been working on with the University of Wisconsin, dump those extreme rainfall events into a model and just see what happens with the flow rates in the Fox River. And we're not quite to the point of getting that data back yet, but what it's telling us is that when we have multiple heavy rainfall events over a course of a couple of different days, it's really throwing what we thought was our typical floodplain, it's really throwing that out of whack. And it's putting a lot more people at risk than what we thought and for longer periods of time than we thought. So eventually, this modeling will be able to be used, translated into other watersheds if it seems to work properly, so that you could take data in your watershed, run the same modeling, and just see how that impacts the river valley and the flood areas around it. So there will be more information coming out on this. Ultimately, of course, this will lead to some strategies as to how to deal with that. Third project that we got going is our vulnerability on vector-borne diseases. I threw this map up there because this is one that just came to us recently. It looks like, you know, Wisconsin kind of in the upper center there, looks like we have a lot of babesiosis, right? That's the green color. But I want to caution you is that underneath that, the entire state of Wisconsin is purple, indicating that we are, along with Vermont, probably the hotbed of the world for Lyme disease. So we're really concerned with Lyme in particular in Wisconsin. And this project really has a couple of different pieces to it. First off, we are looking at capturing data in the north central and northwest part of Wisconsin. If you remember that map that I showed you where northwest Wisconsin was warming faster than anywhere else, it's also changing our vector phenology in that area. And so we've got a project going with the Eau Claire City County Health Department and the University of Wisconsin Eau Claire undergrad environmental health program to do tick drags, giving us baseline data in northwest Wisconsin. And also then, based on what they get out of the tick drags, we're actually doing some PCR work looking at infectivity and prevalence of Borrelia in the tick populations up there. And we're actually seeing some changes from what we thought. We're actually seeing an infectivity rate in that part of the state of 45%, 47% of the ticks being infected, whereas over the rest of the state, we're only seeing about 18 to 20% of the ticks being infected with Borrelia. So we're trying to figure out, is this something that's definitely climate-related? The other piece of this study is with the University of Wisconsin Entomology Department, South Central Wisconsin, looking for Lone Star ticks. Over the past couple of years, we've been able to identify Lone Star ticks in the Madison area, South Central Wisconsin, that appear to be overwintering. So we're finding various life stages. We still have not found larvae, which would really tell us that they're overwintering. But we feel that with the temperature changes and the ability of those ticks to survive, we're anticipating that Lone Star ticks are going to become more of a problem. And, of course, that leads to Ehrlichiosis problems with us. Last project. Do I have a few minutes yet? Maybe. Last project that we got is really where rubber meets the road. It's local health projects. What we're doing through an RFA process is funneling money to some of our pilot projects that are indicated here with the red blocks. La Crosse County Health Department, St. Croix County Health Department, Eau Claire County Health Department in consortium with another number of other counties, and Wood and Portage counties in central Wisconsin. The idea here is to really do that community engagement piece. It's really to take BRACE to the local community. We've got these projects will be getting training from us on climate science, on projections, on understanding what the impacts are in their localities. And then we're going to take that information and we're going to move it into the public sector with their stakeholders. So whoever those public health departments typically work with, we're going to have the stakeholders engaged in a prioritization process where they tell us what climatic issues they're concerned with and how can we build strategies within that community to address those changes, work that into their long-term environmental and public health planning plans, and also make sure that that planning mechanism feeds over into some of their other partners. So whether that be part of their county planning, or whether it be part of their city planning, whether it be part of their long-term infrastructure design, whether it be part of their green planning, all of these different things. We're hoping that by doing it at the community level, where public health really makes an impact within their communities, we're hoping that that planning mechanism then will give the BRACE program some long-term sustainability and some really good on-the-ground adaptation strategies and intervention strategies that would be working, or if not working, we'll figure out how to tweak them, how to correct them. So it gives us a really good laboratory to really see and to really develop the best practices as best we can. Last thing I want to leave you with is just my contact information. Certainly, if you want more information, you want more about what we're doing, give me a call or email me. I'd also like you, if you're interested in some of the other projects and things that we've been working on, look at our DHS Wisconsin Climate website. Also in there, you'll find a list of and some really good toolkits that we have been developing with some of our interns, where we're looking at some of these climatic issues, and we're actually putting together documents that can be used by local public health, which include the climate and science background, the environmental and health impacts background, and then guidance documents that can be pulled out and shared during an event or shared with your news media or worked with whoever may need the information. And there's a handful, there's six or seven different topics, including heat and flooding and drought and some of the other environmental issues that we've talked about. So, all right, get me out of here.